From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where we deal with mental health issues every week from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit, which means finding a sense of higher consciousness, a sense of awareness of all aspects of who you are and how those things relate to you and to your life, and to find a sense of balance so that you are finding more peace and clarity in how you exist and how you relate. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Now, before I get into today's show, I want to acknowledge my sponsor, the Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, Charles King, and he's been a sponsor here for a few months already. And I just want to remind you all that in light of recent events, as a nation, we recently witnessed the unfortunate events and circumstances surrounding the Terri Schiavo case. Each day, hundreds of individuals face difficult, life-altering decisions and are not properly prepared. Don't let this happen to you. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services help. We all tend to avoid stressful, emotional, physical, and financially charged issues and convince ourselves this is never going to happen to me. For your own peace of mind and for the well-being of those you love, don't wait or procrastinate. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services assist you with living wills, trusts, estate planning, medical power of attorneys, and much more. Plan now. Prevent problems later. Call Rainbow Mobile Notary Services at 480-518-2090. That's 480-518-2090, or visit www.rainbowprof.com. That's rainbowprof, P-R-O-F, as in professional, rainbowprof.com. They will come to you to make sure the papers that you need notarized for your own peace of mind and for the peace of mind of your loved ones are handled. They will come to your home, your office, even a hospital room to take care of things, especially for people who are waiting for the last minute. And we all know what happened throughout this country when that was the situation with Terri Schiavo. So don't let that happen. Don't do that to your loved ones. Call Rainbow Mobile Notary Services. Get these papers handled at 480-518-2090. Now, getting into the show, I'll be introducing a really wonderful guest in just a minute or two. But first, I want to talk about the topic for today, empowering yourself by embracing your creative soul. Empowering yourself by embracing your creative soul. Now, again, I use the word soul here. This is a show, like I said, where we deal with body, mind, and spirit. There is a space of creativity within all of us. Now, some of you listening, I know, because I've said this to myself, oh, I'm not creative, I can't draw, I can't paint, I can't write, I can't, you know, but all of us are creative in some way, okay? The issues with creativity, for me, all right, this radio show is a creative process. Coming up with a topic, finding the right guest, even the hour that I'm on the air, I work with very few notes. It's something that I tap into inside myself that speaks to me and comes through and comes out to you over the air. Being a therapist is a creative process. A lot of people don't think of this. They usually think of the image of a psychiatrist sitting with a notepad and someone laying down on a couch and being very detached and not being very interactive. Well, that's not the type of therapist I am, and it's not the type of therapist I really believe most people are. There is a real creative process. There's a real energy that happens in the therapy room. To me, for me, it has to happen for the therapy really to be effective. And it has to happen in order to really feel that bond with the client that I'm working with. If I'm not feeling that bond, I'm not picking up on what's going on. My intuitive process is shut down, and they're not going to get what they need in that process, and it becomes a real unfolding, a real creative journey, not just for me, but for the two of us together, and to couch it for my clients in that sense. Really helped open up a lot of confidence building. And as I keep saying very often, I see my job as a therapist to really help someone go inside where the answers exist to themselves, to really start honoring their own inner voice, their own inner guide, that higher self. And to me, that's the main purpose of a therapist. To me, that is part of the creative process. Now, today we're going to be talking with a woman who has written a really amazing book, actually. I read it in the last 2 days. It's a novel called The Saints and Sinners of OK County. And my guest is Dana Dunbar. She's an author and a teacher. She's written more than 6 screenplays. She's finished her first novel, The Saints and Sinners of OK County, and actually it was her project for her master's degree in spiritual psychology at the University of Santa Monica, which I know very well, where she was named Student of the Year. And she teaches motivational workshops around the country based on her experiences of denying her own creativity for years, then finally beginning to write and walking the path of her own divine feminine voice. So, Dana, you on the air?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Stuart.
Well, welcome. I have to say that reading The Saints and Sinners of OK County was a very moving experience to me, and I'm not just saying it because you're a guest on the show today. I actually found myself having a really good cry as I was ending the book. It really moved me. The healing that happened at the end really touched me. And the characters are genuine throughout the book. I mean, you write, and I believe the sign of a good writer and a conscious reader is when I'm reading that I'm actually, in a sense, visualizing the whole movie in front of me. Mm. That these actors come alive and actually put faces on them and see them, and you describe them in such a way where it's almost impossible not to do that. So I really want to thank you for a wonderful experience.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Totally. I can't wait for the sequel. I know there's a sequel in the works,
yes,
too.
There is.
It's the sign of a really good book when you want to know more about what happened to these characters after the end of the book.
Right.
So it's the type of book where you want to know more about where they went from there. And so I really commend you for this. Now, the title of today's show is Empowering Yourself by Embracing Your Creative Soul. Let's start by talking about your journey. And I really want to talk by starting with your master's in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica. A good friend of mine, Jim Michael, graduated from there also. I've known a number of other people who have attended there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the quality of what they have to offer. What is spiritual psychology, and how would you say it's different from what most people think of a degree in psychology?
Well, a normal degree in psychology really stops at the levels of behavioral, mental, and emotional in the individual. Where spiritual psychology, you're learning those levels and utilizing the different therapies and approaches for those levels. But you are not stopping there. It is a viewpoint which takes into account that the individual, as you were talking about before, has the answers that they need for their healing within them, and those answers come from a spiritual level within, the higher self, the intuition, what is called at USM, the inner counselor. Mm-hmm. And so it goes beyond the personal into the transpersonal, into a level of also spirituality, which says that there is a greater meaning and purpose for us being on this planet, not just to, you know, be born, live as well as possible, you know, with as little insanity as possible, and then die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of it. There's a greater story, a greater context, and that context for each of our lives is a spiritual context.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, it's like, I mean, that's basically what I was saying when I talk about this show being about a holistic approach, body,
right,
mind, and spirit.
Yes.
And again, I've been to some events at USM and know the depth and the quality, because really what they're doing in that program is that the students learn by being clients as well as by being counselors in the process.
Absolutely.
And so they're really pushing them to process their own issues to a greater level. I know my degree at Long Island University in counseling education did the same thing, but I know that this is a much more intense process. Would you agree?
Yes, I would. I think more intense than any other program that I've ever heard of. And I checked into many programs. I was drawn to a transpersonal psychology education for many years and checked into several. And this was the only one that was this deeply experiential, where you're not only sitting in they do what's called trios, where you sit in a client chair and you are working your own process. You sit in a counselor chair where you're facilitating another person's process and practicing your counseling skills, and you also have the opportunity to be a neutral observer where you're observing the client-counselor relationship but not participating, just holding that space and learning a great deal from seeing that interaction but not being involved yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful. It's deeply experiential, and as you mentioned, my second-year project, what they do is they set you up to fulfill a dream in your second year. And isn't that, they call it school the way you always wished it would be.
Yeah.
Instead of writing some dry thesis on a subject that you're forcing yourself to research, it's you have to complete a project. Mine was my novel. So, I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
a significant project that you undertake, something you've never done before, something that you have always said you wanted to do, but have, for whatever reason, generally, insecurities, money, time, all those, you know, excuses
fear.
You come up with, fear, you know, you do that in a second year in a very supported way. And it really, they do it not just so you can complete this dream, but so that you can begin to face those fears and anxieties and insecurities and doubts about yourself, and in a setting where you're then working through them as you're facing them. It's triggering
mm-hmm.
those issues because you're facing all those things that have kept you from doing that, you know, wonderful, you know, having this experience before. So it's just deeply powerful, and really led me, you know, gave me so much. I mean, so much healing, inner healing and personal healing, but this book was also, you know, a product of it as well.
Well, it's a great product of it. And, you know, the other important aspect, I think, of what you're saying is that they set it up in such a way where you have a win, you know, where you actually have a sense of completion. It's not just breaking through the fears, but actually getting the kind of support one needs for taking that dream and making it manifest.
Absolutely. And that is such, you know, when our minds can accept and actually embrace the fact that we have completed this thing that we've never believed we were able to, then it just opens up and just expands the consciousness so that we can then go on and do even greater things than that.
Mm-hmm.
It just really releases so many of those old beliefs that we have that limit what we think we can do.
Right. And again, what you just said is the essence of most therapy, is to explore the limiting beliefs that we have, where they came from, what they are, and work on neutralizing them so that we can replace them with limitless beliefs.
That's right.
And so, you know, that's great. And I realized I could do a whole show on USM.
Right.
And you just gave me the idea to maybe get in touch with them and do such a thing. But I want to now turn it back to you in terms of how your creative process. I know that you were a screenwriter at first, but were you always thinking about being a writer? Is this something that goes back to childhood? Are there other ways you express your creativity, and how did you get through your own blocks, and what were they?
Well, I began reading voraciously as a child, and I think that's a big part of becoming a writer is how much you read. I always wanted, I actually put these writers that I would read and be so touched by up on this pedestal. I wanted to be able to touch people in this way, but I generally, as far as back as I can remember, thought that that was more than I could ever do, accomplish. So for the longest time, I just thought I wasn't very creative. My brother was very, very creative. He was in drama and all these things, and I thought, well, he's the creative one. You know, that was his label, and my label
mm-hmm.
was smart, but, you know, I didn't have that creative label. You know how that goes in families.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just set that aside, and then when I got into college, I did allow myself to take a screenwriting class because it just was, you know, this thing inside of me kept coming up, and I just couldn't deny it, and I had the opportunity to take this class. And as so often happens, I've taught many workshops and hear a lot of these stories about how teachers can tend to squash their students more than facilitate their blossoming, and that's what happened with me. I had a teacher who was from the kind of the old school in Hollywood of you have to write screenplays in an absolutely strict, certain way. On, you know, 3x5 cards where on page 10 this turning point happens and the first, you know, crux of the story, you know, I mean, it was just like, and it was so structured and so strict that, and I couldn't fit what I do into that structure, and so I thought, well, then I must be right. I all along was accurate that I'm not creative, and it just reinforced that for me. So those beliefs, you know, were just more deeply resolved in me, and it wasn't until about 8 years later when I had been searching, you know, doing odd jobs and searching for different ways to fulfill myself in, you know, all the ways that we do that, and nothing ever fulfilled me at all, and I just kept having this desire, this inner desire to tell stories, and it became more painful. It was the day that I got fired from a job, actually, where I finally sat down and I just said, okay, God, what do you want? Because they weren't even able to tell me why they were firing me. It was just like, get out of here. You know, you don't belong here, basically. And I just got a real clear answer that it was time for me to start writing. And it scared the hell out of me. I mean, because I thought I was going to be this horrible failure and just be, you know, a laughingstock if I ever showed anybody this hideous work I was going to come up with. And I didn't know where to start or anything like that. So what I decided to do, because it became more painful to not just do it, whether it was horrible or not, than it was to continue to deny it. It was when that balance shifted and the pain of keeping this at bay was strong, was worse, the suffering was worse than just having this unfulfilled dream out there that may or may not ever be fulfilled, that I said, okay, I'll do it. But I couldn't even start by sitting down and writing anything on a piece of paper or on the computer. I couldn't even go there. So what I did was I went and I just started doing little arts and crafts things and just went outside my house. I was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and gathered sticks and some leather and a bicycle wheel, and I made a big canvas cloth put over it and painted it and made a big shield, and I made these little and I'm not an arts and crafts person. I mean,
mm-hmm.
This is not me, but I this was the best that I could do. I had to do something. And so I just made these little things, but it wasn't one day I did that. It took one day, and then it just opened something inside me, this flow And I then was able to go and sit at the computer, and I started my first screenplay, and I finished it that summer.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I mean, it just, and I've never shown it to anybody. I printed it out, and I spilled coffee on it within about 5 minutes, and no one's ever seen it. And
to this day?
To this day. but it, you know, I went back and read it thinking, oh, my God, it was just going to be awful. And it's actually not that bad. It's a cute little story, you know, and, I mean, I had a little spark even even back then. And so then I just continued doing that. I just would have an idea that would come to me, and I know, you know, your listeners out there, and we've all experienced this where it's like, wouldn't that make a great story?
Mm-hmm.
What about that person in that situation? What if we put, you know, and people that we meet, and it's like, oh, that would just make such a great character. And that's what would happen. I would just get these ideas, and I would say, okay, am I supposed to write? I mean, I would go inside and say, is this supposed to be a screenplay or a novel? It was always, I knew that I was going to write novels, that I wanted to eventually write novels someday.
Mm-hmm.
But it always was the answer, just write screenplays. Very
so that,
clearly.
So that first screenplay is going to be that thing 30 years after your death that they uncover in a trunk somewhere and say the lost screenplay of Dana Dunbar.
Oh, I hope so. That would be just a kick in the pants. It's actually, it's funny because it has some Harry Potter type of, you know, undertones to it. It's an adolescent fantasy. And so wouldn't that be fun? I would love that from somewhere in the, you know, heavens looking down on that. But
let me interrupt you for a minute. I just want to remind my callers this is a live call-in show. So if you have a question or comment about today's topic or for Dana or myself, the phone number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the internet, as I know you are, I had a caller from Northern California last week. Same number, it's the toll call for you, but with today's rates, you know that's minuscule. So give us a call and feel free. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, you touched on so many things in a lot in what you just said. I want to get into the novel itself that you just wrote. I mean, there's so much overlap of what we're talking about with even like Julia Cameron and The Artist's Way, which I'm going to get into in a bit. But there was so much meat, if you can call it that, and I'm a vegetarian, in each one of the characters. And, I mean, if I didn't know you had a master's in psychology, it wouldn't surprise me if I found that out, because your way of developing the characters and the internal world that they all have, even on a subtle plate. Now, you talked a lot. Aletta. Aletta is the main character, and without giving too much of the book away, she lives in a small town in Oklahoma, and is married to an alcoholic and has three kids and one on the way, and is really struggling with her own sense of independence and whether she's in the right relationship and, you know, what she deserves in life and, you know, all the basic questions that all of us ask throughout our lives, and some of us go through our whole lives without reaching for those dreams or honoring our true selves. But she really struggles with it. And the part of her that she really opens up is that even as a child, and the book gets into a lot of the backstory, she had these psychic abilities. And the only way she knew in that town, which takes place in the year 1976 during the bicentennial, is for her to put a sign outside her house in this small town in this conservative Christian community and say, I'm doing psychic readings. And it was genuine psychic abilities, because you really put that across beautifully.
Mm.
So basically, her story was not necessarily about a woman's empowerment, but honoring all our own abilities and listening to that inner voice. And in her case, the inner voices that gave her the readings, but also the inner voice of who am I and what can I do to really be of service in the world.
That's right.
And
what's my purpose here, larger than what I've been expressing so far and trying to fit myself into that doesn't really fit.
And as a parent, she was actually really demonstrating to her kids what it means to go for your dream and empowerment in a community where probably most of those kids were being taught to toe the line, even though there were other teenage rebels mm-hmm. in the group that you talk about, which were really a bunch of beautiful kids. So she was really role modeling. I mean, these kids had an alcoholic father who really was not a great role model, and she was human. She made her mistakes. She knew that she was sometimes over the edge and apologizes to her kids, but down and out, her kids saw somebody who stood up to authority in a way that was appropriate without being destructive and a way that was honoring herself, and that was the beauty of the metamorphosis that you see with her.
Yeah, and what I like about her too, and I think what people relate to with her as well, is that she doesn't make this conscious decision, okay, I'm going to be a hero and put this sign out in my yard and reveal myself. She really does it because she has to. You know,
right.
How a lot of times we only will, you know, look at and deal with the things that we, you know, our true self, if we are hit over the head, whether it's an illness or, you know, a child getting sick, or in this case, she's just desperate to feed her family. She just doesn't have any money, and she has no, I mean, she's pregnant, 8 months pregnant, and she can't get a job, and so to just make ends meet, she puts this sign out in her yard and says, okay, here's what I've got to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, she has no idea what's going to happen to the town, first of all, and this incredible reaction that comes from the town, but also that it's going to require her to climb over this wall of shame
mm-hmm.
that she's constructed within herself around this gift that she has. I mean, she really considers it a curse. And I really, you know, after I wrote the novel, I came to understand that Aletta's psychic ability is not, I'm not nearly as interested in it as the fact that she's psychic, even though it's very fun, and I think there's a lot of fun scenes in there about her giving readings and her intuition. It's more at what it represents, and I think it's a metaphor for what the power and the inner strength and that gift that we all have that we so often, conceal. And it's the very thing that makes us unique that we hide from the world and that we feel ashamed of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really comes across. And in her transformation and her owning that gift, she's really embracing herself.
Right. Well, the other thing that I think is paramount, and I talk about on this show a lot when I talk about kids and parenting and things like that, is kids. I mean, what she was doing when she put that sign out of desperation, but also came from a very innocent place.
Yes.
And it was that innocence that, in her own childhood, she had these visions and she had these awarenesses about what was going on. And it was the adults around her which said, don't tell anybody about that. Or, you know, she had certain experiences where she was totally harassed about it, called a witch by her peers and by the adults in the community. So kids are taught to repress that natural creative innocence.
Absolutely.
That comes out.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to her. And when, I don't know whether it was intended, I think it was, even the young son Randy, you know, he was not the boy that dad wanted. He wasn't into baseball. He was more into helping out around the house inside. And, you know, that was me as a kid, and I turned out to be a gay man, you know, but what I read into that is she honored Randy's differences, not that he's going to grow up to be a gay man necessarily, but he was a kid that was a boy that she was honoring his differences, and I think her sensitivity of what went on in her childhood made her more sensitive and compassionate to the struggles he was having and the disappointments his father felt in him.
Absolutely.
You know?
If she has a very deep understanding and compassion for the so-called fringes
of
society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the people who come to her, she gets to see underneath the facade, you know, of what they're putting out, you know, and what the community sees. And she, because of her experience, she's perfect for this role of being
mm-hmm.
basically a counselor,
right?
Because she accepts everyone.
And that was it. When the Hell's Angels pulled up and one of them came into the reading, I thought that was just perfect.
Right.
you know, and nobody could figure out what's going on here, and, you know, why is this man in her house? And yet she did, you know, at first she was a little intimidated, but she really saw that this was a human soul that had, you know, human emotions.
Right.
And was somebody's son.
Right, and breaks through.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he really has a breakthrough with her and melts a lot of that hard exterior.
Mm-hmm. So the... we could go on and on about so many of the other characters in this, but I think we've really touched on the essence, and I think one of the reasons I love this book, and part of it is I love novels that are challenging and inspirational, and it's kind of like The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, Dan Millman's book, has been a favorite of mine since God knows when.
Mine too.
And it's one of those books I still recommend that my clients read, and it's about a journey, and yet it unfolds in the course of a story, in the course of someone's life. And I learn that way better than reading the colder textbooks or, you know, the more heady stuff, even the metaphysical more heady stuff.
Right.
You know, part of it is my own ADD, but it's like it becomes engaging, and you're getting some entertainment along with the message.
I'm so glad that you're saying this. It's so wonderful, because I really feel like that is my calling, is to tell stories that are transformative, uplifting, entertaining, and liberating for people. And, you know, do it in a way that is that's fun and enjoyable. And the Saints and Sinners of OK County was, you know, all of my screenplays have those aspects, but this really was my first where I think it really came together. And the sequel, I think, is even more, delves even more deeply into that. The Wings that Fly Us Home, which will be out next year. And so it's exciting to me, and that's really the path that I'm on. And I love when people get that. You know, a lot of people read this, and I get feedback that they just read it, and it's just, you know, this kind of the surface level of it. And I think they come away with, you know, something, it's an uplifting story. But people who have a deeper understanding of the transformation that Aletta goes through really are the ones who just love it so much. And that's exciting to me.
Well, I know from what I read from the blurb about the sequel, it gets into some Native American ancestry and on Aletta's end. And, you know, what you're talking about is very much like the elder Native storytellers.
Right.
You know, where they're really teaching through metaphor and through myth and through entertainment.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how they pass on. And most cultures have had that core form of teaching.
Well, I was just talking to a friend of mine about this the other day, and we realized, well, that's what Jesus did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he
told
stories.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what he did. And there was this one level that you could read those stories at, and then there's a complete undercurrent of deep mysticism and spirituality, of course, that he was trying to get across. And so, yeah, it's you know, an incredibly powerful way to... get, you know, to help people understand this. I mean, it's storytelling and story is such an archetypal, universal medium, and
right.
I'm so excited to be a storyteller. It's just I feel so blessed that I get to tell these stories.
Well,
and
you are a blessed storyteller, and I know that there's going to be a lot more coming from you. Now, I alluded earlier to Julia Cameron in The Artist's Way.
Right.
I'm assuming you're familiar with it.
Yes, I actually am, and part of my journey in starting my own, you know, process was reading and doing her work.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You know, because again, I mean, her the artist's way is the spiritual path to higher creativity. It's a course in discovering and recovering your creative self, and that's really what we're talking about here. It's not that you have to learn how to be creative. Like I said earlier, I believe that's something we're all born with. It's part of that innocence that comes in with us. And for most of us that have had it squashed for whatever reasons throughout our life, it's about recovering it. It's
yes.
about going inside and rediscovering it and recovering it and developing some faith and confidence in our ability to put it to use.
Absolutely. I've had this message coming to me in different ways and different things that I've been reading lately. You know how you get that where it's like, okay, this is something I'm supposed to be learning. And it's really been about that. It's been that there's nothing that we're seeking. We don't have to go and get anything. It's already there. Our job is to uncover it.
Right.
Just take off the layers of stuff that we've put on top of our spirit, our creativity,
right.
our soul, and it will shine forth.
Right.
Just naturally. And so that is so refreshing to me. It's so hopeful because there's nothing we have to do to go get to strive toward. It's already there. It's our natural state.
That's the way I describe the therapeutic process to my clients when I'm introducing it to a new client. It's the same process. It's about uncovering the wisdom and the intuitiveness that already exists within them.
Exactly. Exactly. And people who, you know, are, and I talk to a lot of people, you know, in my workshops, who really are so want to write, want to create, want to tell these stories. And they, you know, we all have these things that that keep us from doing that. And I can just encourage people to break through that and don't let any of it, don't let any messages you've gotten before about, you know, that you're small, that what you have to say isn't important. I mean, my big thing was I was a girl, first of all, from a small town in Oklahoma. What did I have to say? You know, that was my big, you know, message, my big tape that I had. I'm just a girl, small town girl from Oklahoma. I don't have, you know, who's going to care what I have to say? And, you know, it's just, whatever that thing is that, you know, we tell ourselves, it just isn't true. It's just not true. And I look at so many books that, you know, you don't have to write that great. I have to say, The Da Vinci Code is not well written. You know, it's fascinating, but it's not, he doesn't write very well. He's not a great writer. That's not the thing. It's if you have a story to tell, then it's important that it be told.
I was told that. I have a number of friends who are writers, and they said the same thing about the Celestine Prophecy.
Absolutely.
It's not the most well-written book, but it grabs you, and it became a phenomenon.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And now let's talk about your workshops, actually, because we have about 15 minutes left on the show. I want to make sure we talk about how people can tap into your wisdom. And your workshops is one way to do that. You know, I talked about The Artist's Way. I mean, that could be a self-study book. That could be something people do in small groups. What are your workshops like?
Well, my workshops are incredibly motivational. And again, I work on different levels within the workshop. One level I work at is a level of healing old beliefs about what it means to be creative, what it means to be a writer. You know, I use Julie Cameron's a quote from Julie Cameron that talks about how it's supposed to be what you produce that makes you a writer, and that's not true. It's what if you write, you are a writer. It doesn't matter if you've been published. And then she says, you know, the first question is, oh, have you been published? Is the, you know, and then that makes you a writer. And then if you say yes, it's like, oh, and how many copies has your book sold? It never is enough, you know,
right.
to just, so forget all that, you know, and so I work on that level, and I also tell people some specifics about the writing, you know, sitting down, writing, I say the joy of writing 3 pages a day, discipline of getting in front of the computer, some of the blocks that I've dealt with in my own writing. And I also talk about the business. I talk about my experience with getting an agent, my query letter that I sent out to agents, that I really think that it's important to get an agent. I talk about, you know, the potentiality of self-publishing and that world, but I really do try to encourage people to go for the gusto and think big. Think about, you know, getting an agent, get, you know, what the contract would be like, working with a publisher, working with an editor at a publisher, those kinds of things. So I try
By giving them that information, you're actually giving them enough information so that it's not as intimidating for them because they know a little bit more about what to expect and how to do it.
Exactly. And I really, really do a lot of debunking of myths because we hear so often that working with these people in you know, the publishing world is like, you know, they're a bunch of sharks and they're only about money and they just want the blockbuster and they don't want to work with new writers and it takes them 6 months to get back to you. I mean, all of that stuff was completely opposite for me. I just had absolutely so many of these myths that are out there, these urban myths about, you know, writing and getting published, just thrown out the window over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And I really go through that and say, okay, here's number one and here's number two. And, you know, it may happen this way for you, but for me, it was exactly the opposite.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not unique in this. I mean, I know other people who have had similar experiences. So, and then, you know, so I've gone through this kind of with just this dark, walking through it in darkness, and just as it happens, I'm learning how this works. Because I chose not to go to workshops, I chose not to go to classes after my horrible class in college that really just ruined me for many years. I said, okay, I don't want to know what anybody thinks what a writer's supposed to be, how writing is supposed to look, how to tell a story, and I didn't touch a book, I didn't go to a teacher, I didn't talk to my friends about it. I mean, I would not do any of it. So when I get into my workshop situation, I make sure that I tell people that and that, you know, it's kind of, I call it the anti-class.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't want people to go and have these preconceived notions. Unless they're positive,
right.
You know,
okay,
I only
yeah.
give people positive preconceived notions about what this is going to be like, because other than that, it's all fantasy. It's all what is ever's in our head, and, you know, they might as well be positive. And so that's been my experience, so that's what I tell people.
Well, the workshops are 1 hour long, or how are they?
Generally,
weekend workshops, or?
Yeah, generally, it depends on how many questions people have and the audience that I get. I mean, an audience with people who are neophytes don't have a lot of questions, which is kind of interesting. They don't know what to ask.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the people who are really writing and pursuing the art that we get into a lot of deeper questions. And they last from an hour and a half to 2 hours, generally.
Mm-hmm.
And my next one's actually going to be at the Celebrate the Divine Feminine Conference.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in a minute because we're both
mm-hmm.
presenting there. But I have one question because I'm looking at your website, which is DanaDunbar.com. I'm going to say that again and spell it because the way she spells Dana is a little different than what most of you might expect. It's DayNaDunbar, DanaDunbar.com. And on there you did, I mean, I don't know if you have any more workshop coming up because it goes up to July 9th. But on May 19th, you were actually in Yukon, Oklahoma, which is your hometown. And
right.
From what I understand, what the town the book was based on.
Correct.
What was it like going back to your own hometown with, as a published novelist and doing a workshop there for you?
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, my book came out about 2 months before my 20-year high school reunion, which was
wow.
perfect, you know. I mean, on an ego level, it was,
yeah.
you know, I couldn't have asked for anything better. So that was great. But going back there, it was wonderful. I had the workshop. I had 50 people at one workshop and 40 at the other. And it was just, I mean, the attendance was incredible. And really, it seemed that people were deeply moved, and I think, and you know, I hope that even if one person came out of that with, you know, actually sitting in front of their computer and starting to tell their stories, their unique stories from their own voice, then I did my job, and so that's what I'm hoping when I do these. So that was exciting. Actually, the next one I'm doing is in Venice Beach, California,
uh-huh.
at the Venice Public Library on this Wednesday, August 10th. At 6:30 p.m., and then I have another one in Laguna Hills at the at a healing center, beautiful healing center there, and that's going to be on August 16th, Tuesday evening at 7:30 p.m. So if anybody's down in Southern California and would like to attend any of those, please just check my website, send me an email, and I'd love to tell you more about that.
Which gets us to September 18th,
right.
And Celebrate the Divine Feminine workshop in Sedona, Arizona, which is a three-day workshop, a three-day conference, and both of us are actually going to be speakers at that conference. You're doing a workshop, Access the Divine Feminine Within to Write and Sell Your Ideas.
Right.
And it's a one-hour workshop. It will include audience participation in which you'll be able to share about your writing experience or just your desire to write. What's that going to be about for people?
Well, it'll be the workshop that I generally give, talking about my story, the blocks that I had to overcome,
mm-hmm.
the beliefs, the old beliefs that held me back, and what a lot of people share with me in that, and then how to overcome those blocks, how to get yourself, to sit down and actually start your work, specifics about people's questions if they're having trouble in their writing and having some problems moving forward in their storytelling, or even nonfiction. I talk to people a lot about writing nonfiction as
mm-hmm.
well. I go into, specific answers around that, and then how to get an agent. I give people a copy of my query letter. I give people some ideas about going to writers' conferences around the country to get an agent, and I talk about working with publishers.
Mm-hmm. So if people want to actually hear you in person, and if they want to hear me in person, because I'm going to be doing a workshop there called The Goddess Wears a Beard.
I love that.
A workshop on reconciliation. It's going to be about not just the reconciliation within ourselves between the struggle most of us have between our masculine and feminine aspects, but also the societal beliefs that most of us were raised in about being male or being female and the angers and fears and things that really keep a perception of the separation that we have, and it's going to be about the reconciliation and healing of those beliefs and behaviors. So it's going to be actually occurring on two levels, and I'm really looking forward to it also. There's going to be Sandra Ray is going to be speaking there,
mm-hmm.
Michael and Raphael Tamora.
Yes, they're wonderful.
Daniel Brinkley, who's been a guest on my show in the past. And
he's so entertaining.
Catherine. Yeah, he's amazing. He's
mm-hmm.
just amazing. So there's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, about 7 keynote speakers, and then the rest of us, I guess the B-list.
Yeah.
There's going to be about 14 workshops that those like yourself and myself are going to be doing. And a lot of celebration, and we welcome people to join us in Sedona on the 16th, 17th, and 18th of September. And if you want more information on Celebrate the Divine Feminine, you could go to their website, which is celebratethedivinefeminine.com, or you can go to my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and get the link for that.
Yes, and I must say that Creative Life Center in Sedona is absolutely spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful, and what a wonderful weekend getaway that'll be for people.
Yeah, I'm truly looking forward to it, and again, I really encourage people to join us there and go to the website and find out more about who's going to be there and how you can get tickets, and they're expecting a sellout, and I wouldn't be surprised about that. So now we have about 5 minutes left.
I have another name for your workshop.
Okay.
That I just thought of. It's actually a little more visually, aesthetically pleasing to me. It's called Zeus Wears a Tiara.
Okay.
I love me a good drag queen, so. but women with beards, I'm not sure about.
Well, I may make it the subtitle attempt.
Okay.
Because there are two ways of looking at it.
That's
you
right.
Know? there was actually a quote that I really like, and that's from Francis Bacon. The job of the artist is always to deepen the mystery.
Mm.
The job of the artist is always to deepen the mystery. And if anybody knows anything about Francis Bacon, he was a man of mystery and quite a creative soul himself and scientist and, you know, has a history with the early Freemasons. And there's a lot to him, and everything about him is mystery. And I think everything we've been talking about today is about mystery. And it's not just the mysteries that unfold in the course of a novel, but it's the mysteries within ourselves that we're striving for in therapy and in expressing the creative process. And it's a good thought for people to remember that the job of the artist is always to deepen the mystery,
right,
to go deeper into themselves and produce something that will challenge and encourage the reader or the viewer to do the same.
Yes.
So with that being said, like I said, we just have a few minutes. Do you have some final words you want to share with the listeners?
Well, I would love for everyone to pick up the new paperback. It just came out in paperback, The Saints and Sinners of OK County, go onto my website and let me know what you think. I have a guest book on there, and I will also do speakerphone chats with your book groups. It's actually a Ballantine Reader Circle selection and is set up for book groups with author questions and discussion questions for any of your book groups that you have. And I will personally, get on and talk to you. And that's all available to do on my website. And you can also read the first chapter of the book and just check it out and see what you think, and then link and be able to buy it off Amazon and all kinds of things. So I would love to hear from anybody who was able to read it.
Well, it's amazing what the Internet will make available for us these
days.
Yeah,
it's true.
Now, the fact that you can have an excerpt in there, the first chapter in there, the connection to book groups, and I know that the outlines for those book groups are all on the website, as you said,
right?
Which is just an amazing thing. And it's nicely designed, and your pretty face is smiling back at people, so they
thank you.
Get
thank
some
you
inspiration
much
from that, too. So, I really, truly want to thank you for taking time on your Saturday. I know you had plans with some friends today, and I'm very grateful that you took the time, and I know my listeners are. And I will remind people that this show, in a few weeks, will be archived on my website, tellthetruthfaster.com. So if you have some friends that you think need to be listening to what Dana and I talked about today, or if you want to listen to it again and get some more inspiration, keep watching the website. It usually takes about 2 to 4 weeks for my guy to get that stuff up and running. But in the meantime, you can use my website as a mental health resource and an inspirational resource by listening to any of the shows I've done over the last 3 years that are all archived on there. And we'd love to hear from you if you listen to anything. Or if you've listened to the show and you were too shy to call in, as I know I do get emails from some of you from time to time, we'd love to hear from you. So, Dana, again, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Thank you for having me, Stuart. It's been a true blessing.
And I can't wait till January when the sequel comes out.
Thank you very much.
And I'll be looking for it. And I thank all of you for listening. And this is Stuart Altshuler on KXAM in Phoenix, Arizona, thanking you for listening on your Saturday and hoping this has been somewhat of an inspiration to get all your creative juices flowing. Have a great weekend, and tune in again next week when I'll be back here with Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM.
some.